Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It's my pleasure to welcome back Robert Kalvorsky to the podcast. Welcome back, Robert.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
So, Robert, for those that may not be familiar with you, you are the host of Rob's Reliability Project, which is another podcast that talks about maintenance, reliability, asset management, all those great things. You're also a senior reliability engineer at Fluid Life. Prior to that, you were a reliability engineer, and you also have a bachelor's of science in mechanical engineering from MIT. Very brief, but did I miss anything in your introduction that you want to make sure we cover?
No, that's great. The Rob's Reliability Project podcast is available anywhere that you get your, at least anywhere that you get Rooted in Reliability. So get on there and let me know if you like it.
Perfect. And we'll make sure to put some links in the show notes for that as well. So Rob, how long have you been involved in maintenance and more specifically lubrication?
I've been involved in reliability engineering for about 7.5 years now, specifically in lubrication for about 5 years.
Excellent. And over those course of those 5 years, I'm assuming you've been able to see some good examples, some actual world class organizations in lubrication programs, correct?
Yeah, I've seen about three or four that I would say were really good. Now, in terms of what makes up a world-class lubrication program, generally when I evaluate or when Fluid Life does assessments on lubrication programs, we look at 12 different categories over, 4 or 5 days. In terms of some general rules that you can take away, there's usually about three rules. So the first rule is right lubricant, right quantity, right time in the right equipment. So that one emphasizes that you're putting in the correct lubricant in the correct amount. In terms of storage and handling, the best rule is keep your lubricants clean, cool, and dry. So we want our lubricants in terms of arriving into the equipment at a great state to keep our equipment at the right, operating in the right way. And then lastly, in terms of taking oil samples, taking representative samples, quote unquote, is what the word we use in lubrication. What that really means is what's flowing through the equipment. So we don't want to take samples off the bottom of the sump, or we don't want to take samples, in a location like off the top of the tank. And so taking those representative samples consistently in terms of method and location.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess there are some specific locations you want to pull samples from. Like you said, not off the bottom of the tank, not off the top of the tank, but there's probably some methodology to setting up proper oil sampling. And that is included in that world-class lubrication program, correct?
Correct. Generally, we want to take samples on the return line from an elbow. That's kind of the quote-unquote best case. But a lot of the times, I typically believe in what's easy. So I was actually doing an audit this week, and they had they have a turbine, and the return line on the turbine, it's a pretty big line, and no one's ever going to drill and tap a location into it. So I'm not going to recommend, hey, you should, shut down this turbine, drill and tap the return line, because that's just something that people aren't going to do. So we can take a sample there off the tank and maybe it's less of a, like less good, but as long as we're taking the sample the same way each time, we can trend the oil analysis results.
Excellent. Now, if we had all those things you mentioned, you know, from oil storage, from lubrication of the equipment, oil sampling, all those things, what type of benefits would we expect to see as an organization with that world-class program?
Yeah, it's the benefits are similar to any reliability program. So you're going to get increased component life, you're going to reduce your maintenance cost, and you're going to get increased availability. Plus, your equipment's going to run more, quote-unquote, reliably, so you can forecast it better. Maybe you'll have less unplanned downtime, those kind of things.
Excellent. So we'll see some reduced maintenance costs over the long term, not short term. We'll see improved reliability and all those other things that come along with a good maintenance reliability program. Now, I'm guessing with lubrication, it's very similar to a reliability program where we don't just go to world class. So how does one begin to build that world class lubrication program?
Yeah, to me, the first step is really having a defined vision and goal. So a lot of people, they don't necessarily define their, and I'm sure you see this, James, a lot, is they don't really define their vision or goal well. They just say, you know, I want to be world-class lubrication, or I want to be world-class in reliability.
Yeah, absolutely. And without that clear definition of where they're trying to go, it's very difficult to figure out how they're going to get there.
Hey, well, we want to spend less money on oil, or we want to use oil analysis to predict failures in a consistent manner. And so those types of things, like, it's not necessarily wrong or bad. It's just they're shooting for a different goal than somebody who's trying to get, you know, a great level of overall lubrication effectiveness. And so once you have those goals in mind, it's fairly easy to kind of plot a path to get there. I mean, easy in a sense of like it's obvious, but it's not easy to actually do because culture change, right?
Yes, making that culture change is probably one of the hardest things involved in any sort of one of these programs, whether it's lubrication, reliability, planning, scheduling. That's all technical, relatively easy compared to the culture and the people change. That's the hardest part.
Yep, I 100%. And so once you have that goal in mind, you'll have to pick some, you know, key performance indicators or KPIs to track where your program starts and where you want to go. And these KPIs, they can change over time. So typically when I start off with an oil analysis program, something that I like to track is oil sampling compliance. So it's a really basic metric. It's just like let's say in July, you were supposed to take 100 samples. How many of those 100 samples did you actually take? It's a pretty simple metric. If you took all 100, obviously your oil sample compliance is 100%. And so that's what you're going to be shooting for. And typically that's something that's achievable for even a program that's pretty basic.
Yeah, it's just like the PM compliance piece. Let's get everyone organized and moving in the right direction of collecting the samples, being consistent, being regular in our application of the tools and the program, correct?
Yep, absolutely. And so like that's a metric that I start off with basic programs. But once we evolve into, you know, like if we were getting into a pretty sustainable program, we're not going to worry about that metric anymore. We're going to probably transition to something else, like maybe, you know, percentage of samples that got flagged, or lubrication issues, stuff like that.
Perfect. Now, once we have those goals, we have those beginning metrics, I'm assuming there's some sort of benchmarking that has to take place, right? To understand where we are versus best practice or world class or so on and so forth. What role does an assessment play in building a world class lubrication program? Is it required?
I would say yes, it's required. that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to pay Fluid Life or Noria or whoever to do one for you. Obviously, if you want one done, I can, you know, reach out to me on LinkedIn or email me at robsreliabilityproject@gmail.com and we'll get you the Fluid Life lubrication audit. You can do it internally. You really, like, it's no different than a reliability audit. You have to understand where you are. You have to understand the gaps that you have. And then obviously those gaps, again, like depending on your vision and goals, will change. So if you are not shooting necessarily for world-class lubrication, maybe you're shooting for being able to take samples and assess the health of your equipment, your audit or what you care about in terms of your audit is going to be a little different. But you're still going to want to benchmark probably annually or maybe once every 2-3 years.
Okay. And that allows you to kind of understand what progress you've made, maybe identify those changes that you want to make or a different location you're going to be rolling that out to and that sort of thing. Kind of allows you to advance your program based on how far you've come, correct?
Absolutely. So each year or every 2 years, it'll help you figure out, you know, what were the changes you made over the last year? How effective were they or what's not working with them? And then it'll help you pick those next 2, 3, 4 KPIs that you're going to really shoot to improve over the next year or two.
All right. Perfect. Now, who needs to be involved in this lubrication program? Is it just the maintenance manager, the planner, and a couple mechanics, or does it expand further than that?
Yeah, so this is a great question, James. Usually when I start off with a lubrication program and the ones that I've seen that have done a really good job, they start off with kind of a small team that does most of the work themselves. So usually that means, you know, you're going to have 2 or 3 lubricant specialists who do all the sampling, who do all the oil changes, who do all the top-ups, who do all the kind of most of the work, plus the, you know, reliability engineer or maintenance engineer and the purchaser. That's kind of how they get by, is the lube specialists do all the lubrication, take all the samples, and then the reliability engineer or maintenance engineer looks at all the oil analysis results and maybe helps purchasing buy the oils. And that's kind of managed on a team of 4 or 5 people. Usually that helps you get from a level, kind of like level 1 to level, 3 or 4. If you want to get to that level 5, like world class, that's when you're going to have to expand out and start engaging operators, engaging the other people, mechanics, millwrights, to get to that almost your TPM level maintenance.
Excellent. So start small with a core group of people, learn from it and slowly grow. And maybe level 4 is all you need to get to where you're not at a TPM level, but start small, understand the challenges, the constraints, get the proper buy-in from the different departments and slowly scale that out, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So like the few world-class programs that I've seen, none of them have gotten to that TPM level, but they're still great programs. They've still seen a ton of benefit. And like, to be honest, I don't recommend that they necessarily even work on trying to do better. I think you can find different things that you can work on as a reliability person instead of trying to get from level 4 to level 5.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. Excellent. Now, when this organization is implementing this world-class program, do they need to involve all the different aspects such as oil analysis, filtration, storage, training, acoustic lubrication, and so on and so forth? Or is it just certain pieces?
Well, again, it depends on what your goal is. If we're talking about like trying to improve our overall reliability of our plant, then you'll definitely want at least good storage and handling practices, like including filtration, and then like a good oil analysis program. In terms of what you can do in-house versus what you can outsource oil sampling, you can outsource oil analysis or interpretation, like Fluid Life offers a service to do that. You can buy clean oil, like Mobil sells a ISO cleanliness code certificate guaranteeing a certain level of cleanliness on some of their oils. So you can buy a lot of this stuff, you can outsource a lot of it, but what really you need to focus on in your plant is correct lubricant getting into the equipment at the right amount, at the right time kind of stuff. So those, you can't really outsource that because that's going to be done by your mechanics or your lube specialists. And so that's what you're going to need to focus on. In terms of bare minimum stuff, definitely buy portable filtration units. They pay back really quickly and they're not that expensive. They're like maybe a couple thousand bucks, but they have huge ROIs.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned a few different things, the oil analysis, the actual application of the lubricant, and so on and so forth. So that leads me to my next question, which is, what type of training should be included in this program? Is it just, you know, we're going to get our lube techs certified with, you know, machinery lubricant, lubrication technician level one? Are we getting them a CLS or so on and so forth?
Yeah, so the different levels of training absolutely need to be different based on what role the people have. If you want, we have Fluid Life offers a recommended training chart that it's available on fluidlife.com that you can download. It's free, obviously, and it'll kind of give you a breakdown of based on what role you are, what training you should get in terms of lubrication. For mechanics or operators, usually what I'd recommend is a 1 to 2 day course, basics course. So lubricant storage and handling, how to take samples, the basics in contamination control. That's kind of it, either a 1 day or a 2 day, pretty quick, pretty easy. For lube specialists, would recommend MLT1 or MLT2. These are the machine lubricant technician courses. They're a 4 day course plus an exam from the ICML, which is the International Council for Machine Lubrication. And for people who are kind of in charge of overseeing the lubrication program or interpreting the oil analysis reports, I would recommend either the MLA2, which is the Machine Lubricant Analyst 2, or the CLS, which is Certified Lubricant Specialist. Those are both 4 day courses plus an exam.
Perfect. So, you know, we talked about quite a few things now. We talked about the training aspect for the different levels of your involvement in the lubrication program. We talked about filtration carts. We talked about oil analysis and storage. What is, with all this adding up, what is the cost to implement or to start building a world-class lubrication program? Can it be done very cost-effectively up front to gain some effort, to gain some quick ROI? Or does it require a lot of upfront dollars for training, equipment, and so on and so forth?
Well, you could definitely get a program off the ground for maybe $10,000. Which I think is a budget that's really attainable for most of your audience. Like what I would recommend there is definitely buy a filter cart, get one person on your team trained, and you know, buy some oil analysis like testing, and you could probably run that for a year and for a budget of $10,000, and you get a half decent program together. Then you could, you could find some quick wins off that, and then push it out, right? So find your quick wins, maybe save a failure using oil analysis. Push that ROI to your manager, and then you can start requesting more money to get more people trained, to get more filtration, to get more, part of the storage and handling stuff.
Perfect. Now, if we started off with that basic program, like you mentioned, say $10,000 budget, how long does it take to implement some of those things and actually start to see some of the benefits within your organization?
For the $10,000 budget, I think you could probably implement pretty quickly. The reason for that is you just need to buy a filter cart, get one or two lube specialists on your program, or mechanics that work at your site on board. And so really there's not too much of a cost to that. But if you're trying to build a world-class lubrication program, it's either, it's an 8 to 10 year process. And, I had Ricky Smith on my podcast a few weeks ago. And one thing he said really resounded to me. I was asking him about, how long does it take to go from a reactive reliability culture to a proactive culture? And he said, some places just won't ever get there.
Yeah, absolutely. You have that change management piece, that people piece again. And it's, some organizations will struggle to get it moving, but once they do get it moving, they get great success. Some will, like you said, never get there for a variety of reasons, which, is a whole nother topic we can discuss at another time. But you're right. Some will never get there, but on this, initial pilot area, if you will, with their $10,000 budget, we can start to see stuff pretty quick as long as we do the proper change in people management stuff up front.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, to be honest, I think you can get by if you're going to try to hack together a project and get it off the ground. You're not going to need to do too much change management. You need to convince one or two mechanics to be on board, or millwrights to be on board with you to take those samples consistently and to apply the filtration. I'm sure you can see benefits in the 6 month timeline. You can get it off the ground pretty quickly.
Excellent. Now, we covered a lot on lubrication relatively quickly, but do you have any tips or words of wisdom to share with our listeners who are looking to implement the overall class reliability program that we may not have covered yet?
Yeah. I mean, my biggest tip is you're going to need a champion. And the champion doesn't necessarily have to be you. It can be, one of your mechanics. It can be one of your millwrights. It can be the plant manager. It doesn't really matter who it is. You're going to need somebody to jump up and down and be crazy about lubrication. So all of those three or four world-class programs that I've seen, they've all had a champion that's been really passionate about lubrication. And you're never going to be able to get through the periods of the hard periods without having somebody who really cares.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a champion, a leader of that project is definitely critical. Now, what is one thing you see done incorrectly with organizations trying to implement world-class lubrication?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with this one is they start to try and run before they can walk. So they start trying to implement, the desk and breathers, they go to a trade show and they buy all the stuff. They buy the storage totes, they buy all the oil safe containers that are color coded. They buy all the stuff, but they don't tell their people why, they don't train their people, they don't teach their people the basic stuff. And that's really where you need to start. So the place you need to start is start with your people. start educating your operators, start labeling your equipment, start labeling your oil sample points. Just start with the basics. You don't need to, you know, like you don't even need to start with oil analysis. Like you could start with just ensuring that the right lubricant is getting into the right equipment. That's pretty basic. It should be something that most people attain, but it's, I mean, from the plants I've gone to, it's a little harder than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if you could give our listeners one action to take away from and act on today, what would it be?
Start small. Start small. So with that $10,000 budget, like it is attainable for most of you out there. And I definitely think that it's something where, you know, you can like, first off, you know, like reach out to me on LinkedIn, or you can email me, robsreliabilityproject@gmail.com. If you have any like specific questions that you want answered, but start small, buy a filter cart, send one of your guys or send yourself to one of the training courses to really start filling out kind of the fundamental pieces of why are you doing what you're trying to do? What steps do you need to take in terms of lubrication, storage and handling, safety, all these different things, and just start small, build your way up.
Excellent. Well, Rob, we covered a lot on lubrication today, but where can people find out more about you? Where can they connect with you? Are you going to be at any conferences, events, and so on and so forth in the upcoming future?
Yeah. So, first off is follow me on LinkedIn. I post on LinkedIn pretty much every day. It has the links to my podcast, to, it has all the stuff that I'm going to be doing. So follow me on LinkedIn, Robert Kalvarowski. Subscribe to Rob's Reliability Project podcast. So it's similar to Rooted in Reliability. It's out once a week on Monday, midnight Eastern. You get a new podcast. And then I'll be at the International Maintenance Conference in December. That's pretty much all I have booked right now.
Excellent. Well, very good. Well, Rob, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about building a world-class lubrication program. There's certainly many pieces involved, right lubrication at the right point, at the right piece of equipment, you know, how we store it, how we analyze samples, how we're consistent in sample gathering, all those things come together to build a world-class lubrication program. But we also learned we can start small and build from there. So thank you for taking the time today. It's truly appreciated.
No, thanks for having me. I mean, let's break down those three rules again, just so then everyone has them. So the first rule, right lubricant, right amount, right equipment at the right time. So that's pretty much, this is what we want to do with our lubrication. In terms of storage and handling, keep your lubricants clean, cool, and dry. And then in terms of oil sampling, take a representative sample the same way each time from the same location. That's it. Sounds easy, doesn't it?
It does sound easy, but there's a whole lot that goes behind that, and we touched on a great deal of that today. So thank you for reiterating those rules. We want it to be relevant and people can remember them. So I think hopefully with those three clear rules that everyone will be able to remember those. So thank you very much.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. And you have a great day. I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.